Isaiah chapter 6. Some of you that know your Bibles very well, you're struggling to find Christmas in chapter 6. I am too. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphim, each one was had six wings, with twain he covered his face, with twain he covered his feet, with twain he did fly. One cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, the whole earth is full of his glory. And the post of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth, and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. And he said, Go and tell this people, Hear ye indeed, but understand not, and see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert and be healed. Then said I, Lord, how long? And he answered, Until the cities be wasted without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate. And the Lord have removed men far away, and there be a great forsaking in the midst of the land, but yet in it shall be a tenth, and it shall return, and shall be eaten, and as a teal tree, and as an oak, whose substance is in them, when they cast their leaves, so the holy seed shall be the substance thereof. Very familiar chapter, isn't it? At least we've heard the first part of the chapter over and over. Preachers have preached from it. I've preached from it a number of times. But I'm going to draw my text from the very first verse. The very first part of the first verse. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon the throne. What are the circumstances? What are the circumstances that have the power to lift a person's vision to be able to take in God in a new perspective? What are the circumstances that are provided to us or that are brought our way that would turn our vision towards God to see Him in a new way? To open our eyes and reveal, give us a vision of God in His power, in His majesty, more than what we've ever seen before. What are the circumstances that have that power? Now, our text here this morning gives us more than just the date of Isaiah's vision, more than just the when, but it also, I believe, it gives us a glimpse into the why of his vision. The first thing that we notice is that Uzziah is dead. Uzziah had been a very strong leader. He was a strong monarch. We see in previous books of the Old Testament that Uzziah was a strong monarch of 52 years reigning. 52 years he had been the strength and the stability of the country, and he had been the glue to hold things together. And for the most part, we find that Uzziah was a very godly man. He did things right in the eyes of the Lord. He had a phenomenal 52 years. It was even marked by some great exploits. You go back into 2 Chronicles in chapter number 26, and you'll find some things that he did. And you read about that and his power, his strength, the military strength, the genius behind some of the things that were done in his day in Jerusalem, in the land of his kingdom. Some great exploits. People feared him. He was powerful. There was a great strength to him. I can see in chapter 26 that he had a host of fighting men. And in verse number 16, though, it gives us a little bit of a turn, that as he was strong, his heart was filled up with destruction, or lifted up to destruction. Maybe as he was strong, that his heart was lifted up to pride. But for the most part, he was a good, good king, a powerful king. Maybe we could even venture to understand that Isaiah had his hand on the pulse of the country. He understood some things that for the most part, so many people would ignore. The pulse was telling him that this man was a great man. He was a strong leader. And the effects of the loss of this strong leader could really bring about some dismaying characteristics or some dismaying casualties to his people. It's difficult to pass the baton. Believe that Isaiah, it could be said that Isaiah understood those kinds of things. And not only did he have the pulse or feel the pulse of the great man of Uzziah that he was and his demise and the empty void that was being left behind, but also I'd like to think that Isaiah also understood that with Uzziah's final days, and the sin of Uzziah's final days, realizing how that could have a devastating or at least a serious negative effect on the country. We might be able to read into this as well that Isaiah was feeling a personal loss. But I think it was more than just or simply the feeling of a personal loss. I believe that Isaiah was perhaps feeling something greater in all of the essence of this great man that had died and the emptiness in the kingship, the empty throne that was remaining. Another thing that we can look at and realize perhaps here as we study out what is taking place and what is to take place, that perhaps as Isaiah had his hand on the pulse of the country, that with this great strong leader's demise and his death, his absence from the public arena, and now somebody else was going to ascend to the throne, that there were some thickening clouds of war that were coming on the horizon. You know, it's a big thing when you have a strong, powerful leader. The threatening clouds of war seem to stay away. We can look at it in our own country. Let's not take the time to go into that, but it's real. War. Isaiah surely understood a little bit about the aspects of war, that when there was war, there was sacrifice. And when there was war, there was a cost element involved, not just a financial cost, but a personal cost that many, many people would have to face and to feel, and perhaps he himself. War would bring sorrow, and war would bring pain. War would bring losses and emptiness, and war would bring for some people the starting over. And starting over isn't easy. There's going to be a possibility of some tremendous setbacks. Isaiah said in the year that Uzziah died, He was feeling the load of it. He was feeling some pressure from all that was taking place and Uzziah's death. You can read about it for yourself in 2 Chronicles. But there's a third thing yet that I believe that we can look at and realize that is taking place here in these first words that give to us the why of Isaiah's vision. Perhaps this one caused the other ones to be more vital or more real. And that was that there was going to be a younger king taking the place. I believe his name was Jotham. He was 25 years old when he ascended the throne. Now, Uzziah, I believe, was 16 years of age. So this guy had a few more years on him in experience or in life anyway. And so surely it wouldn't be too bad. But you see, as I go back and I'm reminded about what I've already said, as I look at this 25-year-old young fellow that is going to be the king, he's going to be the king of a prominent and powerful kingdom. And realizing that his father, in the midst of all of his greatness, in the final years of his life, died as a leper, a leprous man, because he transgressed the commandment of God. And when the priest challenged him, he rebelled. It angered him. He became wroth. He was angry at the priest, and God suddenly smote him with leprosy to his forehead, so that the priest immediately saw it, and they pushed him out. And when he realized that, he went on his own accord, it said. And he had to live the life of a leper. What would that do to a nation? What would that do to the son that is now assuming the responsibility of this powerful kingdom? Youth is full of energy. Youth is full of charisma. Youth is full of adventure. There's zeal involved with youth. But not only all of these things that are involved on the positive side of youth, but there's one great negative that perhaps Isaiah would recognize, that Isaiah could see, that you and I could also see if we look closely enough, and that would be that in the midst of youth, there's a lack of experience. There's a lack of long-distance sight. I'm sure that Jotham was a good guy. I'm sure that he was was trained properly. He was raised properly. He had a good dad. You know, we look at it and we say, well, he comes from good stock. He's a good person. There's nothing wrong with that individual. But you see, this person's a person of his own self. I mean, he's his own man, as it were. He's making his own decisions. Dad now is off the scene, and dad left a bitter taste, perhaps, in his mouth. What is Jotham going to do? What is his long-term goal? And we find as we look through the life of Jotham that he did all right. He was okay, and yet there were some things that were allowed. There were some things that he didn't press against. There were some groves that he didn't destroy. There was some worship that he didn't push out of the country. In other words, while he himself maintained, he didn't hold to the law of God under his command. And so we find that his son, who came to reign in his stead, it tells us very clearly, very quickly, that Ahaz did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. Could it? Could I suggest this morning that Isaiah was looking at the possibilities of Jotham's reign and the possibilities of what was before him? That Jotham was in the position to and be ready to make adjustments that the strong old king refused to make or even apparently consider. I read recently a comment of A.W. Tozer's. It said, "Worship is no longer worship when it reflects the culture around us more than the Christ within us." I keep reviewing that in my mind. Not only does that pertain to our outward worship, but it pertains to our inward worship. And our inward worship pertains to every aspect of our life as we are not our own, but we've been bought with a price. We belong to Christ. And everything that we do, we should do to bring honor and glory to His name. And if our worship reflects the culture around us more than the Christ within us, then it is no longer worship. No, let that sink in. Let that be a dwelling point in our lives as we think about the reflection that we bring. It covers so many different areas of our lives. Testing of new water. Jotham was brought to the brink of this place, of this position, of this prosperity, and he was going to be tested. He was going to be testing new waters. New for him, but not new for others. You know, we're brought face to face with that on a regular basis. We face that on a regular basis. I don't know what stands out in your mind as the greatest testing field of our day for our young people. I'm not sure what you would be thinking about, but it seems to me as though that entertainment might be one of the biggest things that our young people are facing as testing new ground or new territory, new waters. Become so accustomed to something simple and so accustomed to something that is relatively good or called good and realized to be good, and so we become accustomed to it, and it just continues to progress and progress until the lines that would separate good from evil become blurred until they are absolutely or actually gone, and the door becomes wide open. That goes for so many areas in so many ways. Some of you may be able to go back in your mind to the very first message that I preached here after moving in as pastor. And I believe in that very first message I was sharing with the passing of the baton between Moses and Joshua. And how the various groups of the children of Israel would come and knock at the tent post of Joshua and say, "You know, Moses didn't allow us to do this. What about you? Will you allow us to do this?" You see, that becomes the pattern when you have a strong leader who has continued to bear and continue to hold, and the next leader is going to be brought to face with the testing or the trial of these new waters. I think that Isaiah understood that Jotham was going to be tested. The question that may have been in Isaiah's mind, were his young hands strong enough to hold the reins? Was his mind strong enough to guide the nation? And so we see that Isaiah was disturbed to the very depths. He was troubled. But the key element that we find in this passage is he saw the Lord on his throne. Now, we understand that to be a vision, but before the vision, it would indicate to us that his heart was so greatly disturbed and distressed that he took his distress to the Lord. He went to God with his problem. Maybe I should insert it this way, or say it this way, insert it right here, that he was wise enough to take his concerns. He was wise enough to take his concerns. Did you get that? Let me say it again. They say repetition is good. He was wise enough to take his concerns to God. Do we do that? Oh, yeah, we do, don't we? And yet we carry them so often on our own shoulders. We try to bear them ourselves. We struggle over them alone. Oh God, here it is, and then I carry it by myself. I like what A.F. Harper gives. He gives a little example. He said, it's like the worried shopper. Her arms filled with packages. She comes to a closed door and has no free hand to open it. But as she simply moves forward, an electric eye releases unseen power that opens the closed door, and she moves through it into God's world on the other side. Aren't you glad for those electric doors at the store? Aren't we lazy? I'll admit it. Don't have to open and close the door. Just walk through the electric eye or the electricity on the floor there, the little pad thing you walk over, it opens up, releases that unseen power, and the door opens and closes behind you. I like that glimpse as we look at what God does. That as we take our burden to Him, in the midst of us struggling with the burden, bringing it to Him, that He then can release an unseen power. He can release an unseen power to give us the grace that we need or the strength that we need as we rely on Him. So what I notice here in this passage, even though I'm only looking at the very first verse, I see that had there not been an empty earthly throne, it's very possible that Isaiah would never have seen the filled heavenly throne. That's powerful this morning. Had it not been for the distress of the empty earthly throne, it's very possible that he would never have seen the power of the filled heavenly throne. You see, our disturbances can cause us to either forget God, lose sight of God, turn our back on God, or turn our eyes to God. Our disturbances can cause. That's why the Scripture has in multiple different places the essence of draw nigh to Him and He will draw nigh to you. That's why he tells us that if we seek him, if we long for him, and our heart yearns for him, that he will be found by us. Helen H. Lemmel said it this way in a song that we're probably familiar with. In the chorus, she said, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace." We have three things here that we could look at as to what caused the great disturbance in the life and the mind and the heart of Isaiah that led him to cast his burden on God, that led him to seek out after God and to pour his heart out to God. And then he sees the fullness of God on his throne. The power of God on his throne.
I can't really say this morning, you know, some of this may be, you may consider it to be speculation, but I believe that it fits into to what is taking place and what has taken place and through experience and all of that, I believe that it falls into it here. But I really can't say that Isaiah poured his heart out to God with the intent that God was going to give him this great vision. It's not that Isaiah was manipulating God on the end of a string, said, well, I'm distressed here, and if I take my distress in a proper way to God, if I take my burden to Him, that He is going to give me a vision that I am going to be changed by. I don't believe that that's what happened. What happened was that in the midst of his seeking and in the midst of his hunger, God came. In the midst of his disturbance, God was revealed because he was drawing nigh. No, it's not a Christmas message, is it? But the month of December has its possibilities of holding disturbances and troubles. Not just because it's December, just because it's life. And what we do with them determines how we see God. You see, the precursor to his vision was the disturbance in the kingdom. Let's allow our disturbances to give us a new vision, a new glimpse of the power and the majesty and the glory of God. By taking them in a heart cry of desperation to Him, seeking after Him, seeking not what He has to give to us, but seeking Him, seeking for Him to allow Him to saturate us. Let's stand together this morning.